booth for breakfast, but I don't feel like suffering Darla's look of betrayal that I didn't arrest Valentine for assault the other night. She sent me two strongly worded emails, both of which I've ignored. I take a stool and Ted heads my way with a brimming pot of coffee. "What are you doing here this morning?" I ask as he turns over a mug before me and fills it to almost the rim. I drink mine black and don't need any extra room. "There's a big fishing party renting out those cabins near Muir Lake, and they called yesterday to know if we did breakfast. Seems like they're tired of camp food, so they're going to be in before too long. Needed the extra hands." "Gotcha," I say with a nod. "And I'll take a stack of pancakes and some bacon." Ted turns to the kitchen, sticks his head through the window and gives my order to the cook, and then comes out to stand across the bar from me. He leans his elbows on the wooden top. "Heard you had some major excitement last night." "Not as exciting as this morning." "Yeah, Valentine took off after that damn dog of hers and got lost in the woods. She was out there a good 5 hours before we found her." Ted grimaces. "Not good. People don't get how dangerous it is out there." "Well, I'm sure she won't be making that mistake again," I tell him with a grin. Chuckling, Ted gives an amused shake of his head. "That girl has had some adventure. Dating all the boys, getting arrested by you." "I didn't arrest her," I correct. "Getting rescued by you in the woods," he continues. I shrug and sip my coffee. "Word is she stayed at your house last night," Ted says slyly. "Oh, for fuck's sake, Ted," I growl at him. "She was hypothermic and my house was close by. I put her in a hot bath, fed her chili, and sent her to bed. And fucked her hard the next morning." "Put her in a bath?" Ted asks while waggling his eyebrows at me. "You are so juvenile," I grumble. Ted laughs and walks off to refill coffees for those sitting up at the bar. A few other guys come in, both stools to my left and right filling up. "What's up, Chief?" Chris Fields says from my right. I tip my head up at him. "Not much. You?" "Marilyn's pissed at me and refused to cook me breakfast this morning, so here I am," he says, but it's with good nature. He and his wife Marilyn fight all the time, but they always make up. "Heard our newest tourist got lost last night in the woods." I nod, not surprised in the least that everyone knows of poor Valentine's adventures. "We got lucky and found her before any damage could be done." Chris nods in agreement. "Yeah, hate to lose that luscious little piece." I hear from my right and turn to see Gavin Smee next to me. He's a logger and an asshole. I grip my teeth and hold my tongue. "She is a pretty little thing," Chris says from my right, but his tone is respectful. "I heard she put on quite a show the other night, though." Gavin slaps a hand on top of the bar and says, "You should have seen it, Chris. That girl was gyrating, shaking that ass and tits all over the place. I'm surprised her clothes didn't come off." "Why don't you shut the fuck up?" I growl as my head snaps to Gavin. "Have some respect." Gavin holds his hands up. "Ease up, Logan. You saw her dancing, too. You know I'm telling the truth, and I wasn't the only one who had his tongue out panting. She's a girl that likes the attention of men." And thus is the problem of living in an area with a bunch of mannerless, horny men who don't get laid often enough. "I heard she's been on a few dates already, and she's not even been here a week," Chris says. "My wife heard that from Percy at the post office, who heard it from Leslie at the general store." I roll my eyes, sip my coffee, try to block them out. Gavin leans forward a bit, then toward me, so he can address Chris sitting on my other side. He lowers his voice as if this is the biggest secret in the world and says, "She's got a date with Mike this afternoon to go fishing, a date with Corey Warden on Tuesday night, Rob Chambers on Wednesday, and Sam McEthran on Friday night." "Guess that leaves Thursday night open," Chris says with a chuckle as he shakes his head. I, of course, felt my anger starting to rise by the time I heard about her Tuesday night date. When I'd asked Valentine out to dinner tonight, She had sheepishly told me she'd made plans to go fishing with Mike this afternoon. But her smile then brightened as she told me that she would gladly cancel those plans to spend the evening with me. I had no clue, though, she'd already had 3 more dates lined up for the rest of the week. She certainly didn't mention it to me either before or after I fucked her. I'm thinking that night she was dancing on the tabletops had yielded quite a few date requests and acceptances before I arrived. God damn, that pisses me off. I told her I didn't do hookups. She pretty much said the same. Add to that the utterly fucking amazing sex we had, a date the very next night whereby she had to cancel a date with someone else, and I was pretty damn sure we were exclusive. I mean, we didn't have that exact conversation, but surely it was a given. Right? My thoughts are broken when Ted slides a plate of pancakes in front of me, the buttery sweet smell along with the salty bacon actually turning my stomach. I pull out my wallet, nab a $10 bill, and throw it down on the counter before I slide off the stool. "Where are you going?" Ted asks, his expression confused. "Not hungry," I mutter, and walk out of the wounded caribou. The first text from Valentine came in at around 3:30 in the afternoon. It was playful and sweet, and because I was driving, I had to pull over to read it. "Can't wait to see you tonight. And I mean all of you." Yeah, my dick jumped, but I threw my cell in the passenger seat and pulled back onto the road, not bothering to respond. I'll be damned if I'm going to spend my hard-earned money on a nice dinner for Valentine, potential fucking later aside, if her agenda is to do the same with all the men in this town. Her first call came in at 6:15 p.m., and I didn't answer my phone. I did, however, listen to her voicemail. I was sitting at the Wounded Caribou eating a burger for dinner. "So I thought we had agreed you'd pick me up at 6 p.m., but maybe I was wrong. If I'm wrong, see you soon. If I'm not, hope everything is okay. Call me." Her second call came in around 7 p.m. I was actually at the station by then doing some paperwork that had accumulated the last few days. I also ignored it, but listened to the voicemail. "I have no clue what's going on, but I'm assuming our dinner date is off. It would have been nice if you to let me know that, though. And even though I'm mad at you, I'm also really worried. Please just call me and let me know what's going on, or call me to tell me to fuck off. One or the other." I almost called her back and told her to fuck off, but that's just plain rude. Of course, it was rude of me to ignore her, but I'm still too angry to talk to her. Hopefully I'll calm down by tomorrow, and we'll actually head over to Sarah's, collect my 2 jackets I loaned her, and tell her I'm more of an exclusive relationship type of guy, but I wish her the best in whatever type of record she's trying to set with the men in East Merritt. I get lost in my work. While East Merritt is generally a peaceful town, long work hours and alcohol make for trouble. Mostly fights, some destruction of property, and the occasional theft or robbery from some bad seeds who come to town. Court cases are heard once a month over in Ketchikan, and it's my job to be there with my reports and to testify as to what my investigation revealed on these matters. I'm deep into refreshing myself about the case between Jimmy Hightower and Ralph Summersby. They got into a fight because Jimmy cut down a tree that he believed was on his property and Ralph believed it was on his. Jimmy got a black eye. Ralph got a busted lip. Both insisted on assault charges being filed against the other. My phone rings, startling me. I glance at the caller ID, expecting it would be Valentine, but it's actually Leslie from the general store. I answer it pleasantly, even though I'm feeling anything but. "Good evening, Leslie."
"Hey, Logan,"
she says in that raspy voice that denotes she smoked unfiltered cigarettes for decades.
"Sarah and I are handling the final details on the Wild Wilderness Woman Contest, and wanted to make sure that you're still going to be a judge if we need you."
I hold in the sigh of dread, but instead tell her as pleasantly as I can, "Of course. Told you I'd be there."
"Awesome,"
she says, and then I hear her suck in a deep drag on a cigarette. After she blows it out, she says,
I also made you some of those blondie bars you love, and I was going to drop them by. You at home?
Nah, I'm at the station. I tell her with a tiny bit of excitement, because those blondie bars are fucking excellent. Should be here for a few more hours if you want to drop them by. And this will be the highlight of my day.
Sure thing, she rasps.
Thanks, Leslie, I tell her gratefully. You're a doll. She just laughs and hangs up. I tip my head down to continue reading the report, and about 3 minutes later, the front door of the police station opens. I lean forward in my chair, expecting to see Leslie walk in. My chest tightens when I see it's Valentine, and she looks pissed. She stalks through the lobby and into my office, leaning over and slamming her palms on my desk. My cup that holds my pens rattles. I cock an eyebrow at her. I'm assuming you just coerced Leslie and Sarah into finding out where I was, right?
Well, what did you expect when you wouldn't return my calls?
She sneers at me. My stomach rumbles in disappointment that I won't be getting any of Leslie's blondie bars, but my chest still constricts at seeing Valentine in front of me. She has on a cream cable-knit sweater, dark jeans, and hiking boots. Her hair is pulled back into a long ponytail that hangs down her back, and with her fleece vest, she actually looks like she might belong. So what can I do for you? I ask her pleasantly as I lean back in my chair and kick my feet up on the desk. I swear I can see flames sizzling in her pupils, and her hands curl into fists. I bet she'd be fucking glorious in the sack having pissed off makeup sex, but I'm certainly not entertaining that thought. Not seriously, anyway. Valentine narrows her eyes at me, but her voice is quite calm when she asks,
I want to know why you didn't bother to show up for our date and didn't bother to respond to my texts and voicemails to find out why.
I shrug nonchalantly. Didn't think it would be that big of a deal, honestly. I expect her to come at me with claws bared and fuck me. That sort of turns me on. But instead, her face falls and the fire dies instantly in her eyes. In its place is pure, unfiltered hurt. And that catches me totally off guard. Valentine doesn't say a word, but merely nods before walking out of my office. I'm stunned there's not going to be a fight, or that she's not giving me the opportunity to give her the explanation she so adamantly demanded just seconds ago.
I didn't think it was that big of a deal because you already had plenty of other dates lined up.
I call at her retreating back. She halts right in place just outside my office door and turns to look at me in confusion.
What?
Your other dates, I say as I pull my feet off my desk and stand up.
I already told you I'd cancel that date this afternoon with Mike, and I did, she says.
But what about Tuesday's date with Corey Warden, Wednesday's with Rob Chambers, and Friday's with Sam McKeithren? I ask, and I can't help the slight sneer in my tone. Now I'm able to validate my actions. She blinks at me several times before saying,
I have no clue what you're talking about.
I snort in disbelief. I heard all about it this morning at the Wounded Caribou. You apparently accepted several dates that night you were tearing up the tops of the tables, and darling, I told you I don't do hookups. That's apparently your thing, but it's not mine. Valentine steps back into my office and I can see the wounded look is gone, replaced again by heated anger.
So let me get this straight. You heard some people talking in the Wounded Caribou, and let's just call it gossip, because that's exactly what it is, and you chose to believe that I'd made dates to go out with men this week?
Well, it wouldn't have been the first time you'd booked several dates in 1 week, I point out.
True enough, she says as she inclines her head to me. But that was also before I let you fuck me with your big dick this morning and made a date with you this evening, for which I canceled a standing date. I think that sort of says something about me, don't you? That I'm not into hookups either?
But you made plans to go out with those men, I say, getting back to the subject. Are you saying you've canceled them as well? Because that's not what I heard just this morning. Valentine gives me a look that says,
You poor, pathetic, misguided, and ill-advised bastard.
My advice to you in the future, Logan, is not to take stock in gossip. Perhaps go to the source and find out the truth for yourself. But just so there's no doubt, I did not make any dates with any men for this week. I may have been drunk and having a great time that night, but I'm not stupid. I don't make any choices when I've had alcohol in my system. I did have several men ask me out, but I declined them all. Had you bothered to just ask me that, we could have saved a whole lot of frustration, anger, and disappointment.
And now my stomach drops so low, it feels like I just got kicked in the balls.
You're not who I thought you were,
she says quietly. Valentine, I say, almost pleadingly, because I am quite clear that I've been all kinds of a foolish asshole.
Don't bother,
she says softly as she turns around and walks out of the police station, the finality in her tone unmistakable. I sink back down into my chair. Goddamn motherfucking idiot. Pushing the reports away, I put my mind onto a more important task, figuring out how to make this right with Valentine. Because she might be finished with me, but I am nowhere near finished with her.
Valentine's Couch, blog entry, July 10th, part 2. I may have overly romanticized him. I know, I just posted my last blog this morning, and I never do more than one blog entry a day. But much has happened in the past 12 hours, and I have things on my mind that I guess I need to purge. This is going to be short and simple. Ladies, it takes a while to get to know someone, so don't let a few nice breakfasts, a kindly offered ride somewhere, or the mere fact that someone treks through the woods to save you from dying is a true measure of that person's character. Definitely don't let the number of orgasms cloud your judgment. I've been blogging for almost 7 years now. You know me, and you know I don't have a romantic heart, so I know many of you probably had raised eyebrows that I was so effusive about the chief yesterday. But please, don't worry. It was a moment of insanity. I've been brought back down to earth. I'm heading to bed. And tomorrow, I'll be looking at things through fresh eyes, but also a slightly jaundiced filter due to past experiences. Because, after all, I'm the girl who's always suspicious of a truly genuine man. It's what led me out here to begin with. Not providing the details, but it's fair to say that the door is back wide open for me to continue with my experimentation. Reporting more later. Chapter 13. Valentine. I meander down Main Street, flipping through texts and emails on my phone. I'm actually in a good spot and have 3 full bars of coverage. Grimacing, I pull up a voicemail from my mother. My finger hesitates over the play button, and I debate about whether or not I want to hear what Barbara French has to say to me. On ordinary days, I've got a spine of steel and a skin so thick, none of her jabs, insults, or not-so-subtle innuendos can hurt me. But today isn't ordinary, because I still have major bruised feelings about what happened yesterday with Logan. In less than 24 hours, he went from friend, to savior, to lover, to asshole. And I'm trying to process it. Now, he's not the first man who's dinged my ego. He's not the first man I thought I had judged correctly and then found out I was dead wrong about. But goddamn it, he's the first one that I'm bothered about for misjudging him. A new flush of anger over the way Logan treated me yesterday renews my fortitude, and I stab at the voicemail with my finger. My mother's voice comes through just as smoothly polished as can be. This took her years to master, as she married into my father's money, but she holds back nothing. She never does.
Val, honestly, I cannot believe you're writing blog articles detailing your... And here, she whispers it like it's a really bad thing. Sex life. And to call your family snooty is just not fair to us. You know, if I didn't know any better, I'd say you write this trash to hurt us. And frankly, you need to grow up a bit. Your father feels the exact same way. Now, I want you to call me so we can discuss this. Nonsense. It has to stop. Okay, I have to go. The limo is here to pick me up for a shopping excursion with Babs. Call me. I roll my eyes and delete the message. I love my mother. And my father, for that matter. I really do. But I don't have a lot of respect for them, as they were absent parents as I grew up. My father is a venture capitalist, and a good one at that. He tends to invest outside of the United States, so he traveled far more than he was ever at home. During my younger years, my mother traveled with him, and I went to boarding school. That wasn't a hardship. Jeremy went too. His father is partners with my dad, and the Frenches have produced a long line of men who can sniff out the potential to make money on new ideas, technology, products, or what have you. At any rate, I didn't know my parents all that well growing up, and once I became an adult and started doing adult things with them, you know, society parties and shit, I realized that while I loved them, I didn't like them all that much. My mother is too concerned that someone has a more expensive necklace than she does, and my father has been banging his secretary for years and doesn't seem to care that everyone knows. He keeps my mother happy by buying her more diamonds, and my mother bangs the pool boy to get back at my father. This is not to say that all wealthy people are shallow the way my parents are. Far from it. I know many, many in my extended family and peers who are generous, kind, humble, and down to earth. My parents, of course, don't really associate with them, but whatever, it is what it is. Now, as to my mom's current conniption, I'm not going to bother calling her back on it, nor am I going to change my ways. She's read far worse by me. I once did a blog article teaching women how to deep throat, which is something I learned from a man I dated for a few months and was a patient teacher. My mother was not pleased by the fact that her daughter wrote about this torrid subject, and I suspect she was not pleased to learn that I enjoyed it. My phone rings in my hands, startling me, but I see it's Jeremy, and my smile goes big. About time you called me back, I say as soon as I answer the phone. Sorry, Valley, he says. Busy having honeymoon sex and all? Ew, I say, with true disgust. I don't want to know about you having sex. You don't mind me reading your blog articles about hot cops with big dicks, he retorts. I wince at the painful reminder that that particular hot cop with a big dick is certainly no more, and remind him pointedly, I don't force you to read them. Yeah, but they're so much fun, he says with a laugh. I bet Aunt Barbara has got to be shitting diamonds today. She's already left me a voicemail, I say dryly. But seriously, it wasn't as bad as the deep throat one, right? Right, he agrees, because he's always my champion. But then his voice turns somber. But seriously, how are you doing out there? You've had some big adventures so far. It's not what I was expecting, I tell him, honestly, as I reach my intended destination on Main Street and lean up against the exterior wall while I continue to talk to Jeremy. First, you're such a shit for not telling me how backward it is here, or for preparing me for what to bring. But I'm over that now. But the men are totally different, right? He pushes. Well, yeah, I say glumly. They're a bit more coarse, but because women are lacking here, they certainly are more eager to please. The problem is, they really don't know what that means to a woman.
Contrary to what you wrote about the chief,
he jabs at me. Let it go, Jeremy, I scold him. That ship has totally sailed.
Bummer,
he says glumly.
I was hoping you'd fall hard for a wilderness hottie.
Well, give it up, I tell him pointedly, and then look at my watch. I have another 10 minutes before Shaston's Fly Fishing Tours opens up. I hear Aubrey's voice in the background calling for Jeremy. She's probably doing it on purpose, knowing he's talking to me.
Gotta go, Val,
Jeremy says into the phone.
Any idea when you're coming back home?
Soon, I tell him. I have a few things I want to take care of, starting with Jorgen Shaston, but then I'm out of here. I'll text you details. We both give quick love yous before signing off, and I tuck my phone into my shoulder bag. I look down at my outfit, not feeling at all weird about my choice. While I've worn my fair share of outdoor clothes around town, today's not a day that calls for it. It's still a bit chilly, but temps are supposed to get into the mid-70s. As such, and because I intend to spend the day away from this podunk little town, I dressed up a bit. I put on a lightweight, camel-colored skirt with a dark brown lace overlay that sits high on my waist. I paired it with a crisp white blouse, a lavender pashmina scarf wrapped around my shoulders, and a pair of gorgeous camel Ferragamo boots with 4-inch heels. The scarf, of course, will come off when it warms up a bit. Glancing at my watch again, I note Jorgen's shop doesn't open for another 5 minutes. I lean forward, twist my neck, and peek inside the front window. It's still dark, so I lean back against the building with a sigh and wait some more by pulling out my phone and surfing through Facebook and Twitter, responding to a few tweets from my Valentine's Couch post. The rumble of the truck doesn't necessarily get my attention, because most people drive trucks around here, but I hear Logan calling out to me.
Hey, Valentine. Got a minute?
My head snaps up, and I see Logan's pulled his truck parallel to the sidewalk where I'm standing. He's got the passenger window rolled down, his left arm draped casually over the wheel, and he looks far too good, in my opinion. So I drop my gaze back down to my phone and call back, Nope. My body stiffens when I hear the creak of his truck door opening, the slam of it closing, and his boots hitting the sidewalk in front of me. I don't look up, blindly scrolling through my tweets.
We need to talk,
he says. No, we don't, I reply, still keeping my face tilted down. Big mistake. Big mistake, because his large hand comes up and cups me under the chin, forcing me to look up at him. His expression is troubled and contrite.
I'm really, really sorry, and I need to talk to you about it. I made arrangements for one of Ketchikan's officers to cover for me today, and I wanted to take you out and show you something.
My breath seems clogged in my lungs. My body, with my brain egging it on, wants to just sink into his big body and let him take me wherever he wants to go. My heart is a cold bitch, though, and I pull my face away from his hand. I'm sorry, I say coolly as I tilt up my chin stubbornly. But I've got plans today. Logan's gaze travels down my body. There's nothing heated or sensual about it. He's giving me a critical once-over, and I can see it written all over his face. He's dying to know what my plans are. Before he can ask, or I can taunt him, a man whom I assume is Jorgen Shaston walks up to the door I'm standing beside and unlocks it. He tips his head to Logan, then to me.
Morning.
Morning, both Logan and I say back. Jorgen opens the storefront door, walks in, and closes it behind him. I see him flip the open sign in the window, and then I turn my attention back to Logan. Look, I'm sorry you made plans for someone to cover for you today, but honestly, Logan, I accept your apology, and there's nothing else to talk about. I see a tinge of relief in his eyes that I accept his apology, and he even gives me a small smile.
Sure, I can't talk you out of your plans today. Sorry, I say as I push off the wall and turn toward the front door to Jorgen's shop. But I have a hot date right now, and I don't want to be late. Logan's eyes narrow, and a muscle in the corner of his jaw jumps. He takes a breath, seems to unclench his teeth, and tips his head at me.
All right. Guess I'll see you around.
Sure thing, I say pleasantly, and then give him my back, walking into the fly shop and shutting the door behind me. I see Jorgen standing behind a large glass counter that has multiple hinged glass panes. He has one open and is placing something inside. As I walk closer, I see their various flies that he's created. April had told me it's a true art form to create these lures, some of them having so much detail using bits of string and feathers that it's hard to tell them apart from a real bug. Jorgen looks up as he places the last fly in and closes the pane.
It's Miss French, right? What can I do for you?
It's just Val, I say with a smile as I reach my hand across the case to him. He shakes it with an affable smile. And I came to book a fishing trip with you. Jorgen blinks in surprise and says guardedly,
I thought you were supposed to go on one with Mike yesterday.
He clearly hadn't heard that I'd canceled that, and apparently the gossip mill wasn't reporting anything new about Logan and me. But it doesn't matter. I'm not interested in Jorgen. Actually, I say as I lean my elbows on the case, I've become friends with April Billiott. You know her, right? Jorgen's cheeks turn a bit red as he nods.
Yeah, sure I know her.
Well, she loves fly fishing, and I've been wanting to try it. I canceled with Mike yesterday as I wasn't feeling the best after my ordeal in the woods. That lie seems to scrape my throat as it comes up, but Jorgen nods at me in sympathy. At any rate, April said you were the best in the business, and she hasn't been in a long time, so I suggested that maybe we could both book an excursion with you. I know I'm going to positively suck at it, so it will be a lot more fun for me to have April with me. Jorgen doesn't seem to suspect anything's amiss with my story, and he nods.
Well, sure, I'd be glad to. How soon do you want to go?
Have anything tomorrow, I ask. It has to be soon, because seriously, after I try to work some matchmaking magic on April and Jorgen, I'm probably going to head back to New York.
I'm booked late afternoon, but we could go out around 10 in the morning. How's that sound?
He says as he looks at a spiral-bound calendar beside his register. Perfect, I say with true delight. This is turning out to be way easier than I thought.
All right, he says. Both of you meet me here about 10 tomorrow, and we'll head out.
Great, I say as I head out of his shop, because now I'm on to phase 2 of my plan. See you tomorrow. When I step out of Jorgen's shop, I'm relieved to see Logan's truck is gone. I pull my phone out, taking advantage of the cell coverage, and I dial April's phone. She answers on the second ring. What's up? Your mom is giving me a lift over to the store, I tell her as I start heading back to see Sarah, who is waiting for me. I sprung this plan on her this morning, and she was all for it. Then she's going to watch the store while you and I head into Ketchikan. What? April asks, with as dumbfounded a tone as I'd expect right now. We're going to get your hair done, highlights and a trim. Also, hit some better stores for more makeup and maybe some clothes. Valentine French, April says, in slight exasperation but with a hint of curiosity. What the hell are you up to? Just be ready to go, I tell her smugly. I'll be there in about half an hour.
Chapter 14. Logan. Sarah opens the door to her house and grins conspiratorially as she welcomes me in. She up yet? I ask as I shrug out of my jacket and hang it on the coat rack just inside Sarah's door. Nope, she says. But you're here kinda early for her. I snicker because it's already 8 a.m., and if Valentine's still in bed, sound asleep, She sure as shit is not going to take kindly to me waking her up. Oh well. You got her dog taken care of, right? I ask Sarah, as I head for the staircase that leads up to Valentine's room.
Already let the little pissant out this morning when I fed the boys, she says, but I can hear the fondness in her voice. But he's going to bark at you when you go in her room.
I'm sure her bark will be worse, I mutter as I start up the stairs. I was not a happy camper when I saw Valentine yesterday on Main Street, looking once again like she stepped off the pages of a fashion magazine. Her clearly expensive, tailored, and tasteful clothing was a bitter reminder she doesn't fit in here at all. Not really. Her giving me the major brush off was an even harsher reminder that she was pissed at me beyond repair. When that little vixen told me she had a hot date before strutting into Jorgen's shop, I was boiling mad. For all of about 5 minutes. But then I remembered that April was sweet on Jorgen, and I knew that Valentine was friends with April, which meant that, without a doubt, Valentine did not have her sultry little eyes set on our resident flymaster. It only took a quick call to Sarah, who confirmed for me Valentine's nefarious plan to schedule a fishing excursion with April included to hopefully get them to really see each other. Sarah told me all of this with true fondness in her voice for Valentine and her efforts to make her daughter happy. Sarah also divulged to me that Valentine's big plans for the day was taking April for a girly trip into Ketchikan for hair and nails and new clothes. Why they were doing this, if they were going fishing the next day, was beyond me, but I fully admit I know next to nothing about women. I definitely proved that with Valentine the day before yesterday, when I failed to give her the benefit of the doubt. So yesterday I gave Valentine her space to do what she needed to do with April. I rescheduled the part-time officer in Ketchikan who helps me out on occasion for today. And right now, I square my shoulders and march up the stairs to Valentine's room. Because we are going to talk today, and we are going to hopefully do it while I'm overwhelming her with a very well-laid-out plan. The minute I open her door, Sassy pops her head up where she's lying beside Valentine and issues a little growl in her throat. I halt and wait for her to let loose with a string of yaps. But she just watches me with her head tilted. Perhaps she remembers me from that one time I saved her from a non-existent bear, or maybe she even has some sort of weird doggy sense that I saved her mother. But she lets me approach Valentine's bed without issuing another sound. In fact, I see her little tail wagging the closer I get. I put my finger to my lips and give the dog a shh. Not really quite sure how to wake up Valentine and not shock the shit out of her, I decide to go with a careful prod. She's on her side facing me, one hand tucked under her pillow, and the blankets pulled up over her shoulders. She's got a sleeping mask on her face that's pink and looks to be made of satin, with the words princess stitched in cursive across the front. I squat down beside her bed, put my hand to her shoulder, and give it a gentle shake as I say her name. Valentine? Honey? Wake up. She comes awake with a jerk backward as her hand tears the mask off her face. Her eyes are unfocused as she takes in my hulking figure squatted by her bed. Valentine releases a blood-curdling scream, and her hand, the one not curled under her pillow, shoots out and catches me on the side of my jaw with a resounding crack. Fuck, I mutter as I fall back on my ass, rubbing at my face. Jesus Christ, she yells at me as she sits straight up in the bed, shaking her hand out. What the hell are you doing skulking in my room?
Everything all right up there?
Sarah yells up the stairs. Just fine, I call back as I come to my feet, and with a pointed look at Valentine, rubbing my jaw, I tell her, I wasn't skulking. I was gently trying to wake you up.
Why?
She snarls as she shoots a glare at Sassy for perhaps not barking to give her warning. Get up and get dressed, I tell her, not at all happy with the way this has started out. We're spending the day together so we can talk.
We most certainly aren't spending the day together.
She snaps at me as she starts to stand up from the bed.
I've got a fishing excursion planned with April.
I place my palm on the center of her chest and give her a slight push, so she sits back down on the bed.
Yeah, about that. I canceled your participation. It's just April and Jorgen going. And frankly, you'd be a third wheel anyway.
You, she stammers.
Canceled your presence in the boat that April and Jorgen will be in today, I say with a sly grin. You're coming with me.
I am not, she says stubbornly.
I'm a big man, no doubt, but I can move fucking fast. Before she can blink, I've got her flat on her back, and I'm kneeling over her with my palms on the mattress near her head. Valentine bucks her hips up hard to try to dislodge me, but I don't budge an inch. Sassy gives a playful yap, spins around on the mattress 3 times, and then flops to her stomach to watch it play out. Valentine's eyes go frostily aloof with mostly stubborn refusal to let me back in.
I'm taking you out to explore today. We're going over to the Misty Fjords so you can get to see some of the real beauty of Alaska, and hopefully some wildlife too. We're going to talk. You're going to let me apologize again for the other day and not giving you the benefit of the doubt. I hope you're going to truly accept my apology and give me the benefit of the doubt that I learned a valuable lesson where you're concerned.
Valentine, you're going to listen to me ask you for another chance to be with you for however long you're going to be in Alaska, and I'm going to ask for exclusivity while you're here. And finally, at the end of a very good day where all of this transpires, you're going to come back to my house, and I'm going to make you feel very, very good in about a dozen different ways. I notice that Valentine's chest is rising and falling in short bursts, and her eyes took on a heated look when I mentioned going to my house tonight. Still stubborn, she says,
"What makes you think I'd want to do any of that with you?"
I shrug and give her a mischievous grin. "Well, I can't say that you want any of that. But your nipples are hard as rocks right now, so I'm thinking that last part about going home with me sort of appeals to you."
Valentine gasps and immediately denies it, even as she looks down at her traitorous breasts. "They are not."
Oh, God, they so are. Clear as day through her heavy thermal t-shirt. I prove my point by tweaking one with my forefinger and thumb, and Valentine's eyes close with a soft moan. In this moment, I could strip her naked and have her, but that's not the order of how things are going to go today. So I move off the bed and pull her up by her wrists so she's standing. Her eyes flutter open and she looks at me confused. "Get a shower," I tell her. "No makeup, outdoor clothes."
"But Sassy," she starts,
"is being handled by Sarah for the entire day and night," I assure her. That seems to snap her out of her daze and her eyes narrow.
"I'll go with you today and we'll talk, but there's no guarantee about tonight."
"I'll bring you back here to Sarah's anytime you want me to," I assure her. Then I give her a light slap on her ass and say, "Now hurry up and get ready."
"When you said you were going to show me Alaska, I had no clue you were talking about from the air,"
Valentine says through the headset she's wearing. Despite the slight crackle, I can hear the wonder and awe in her voice as we fly over Misty Fjords National Monument, which, at 2.1 million acres, is really a designated part of Tongass National Forest. I've been here 7 years, been coming to visit longer than that, and I never fail to have my breath taken away by the beauty. Lakes formed by glacial runoff so clear you can see the bottom, snow-capped mountain peaks, green forests and misty waterfalls. I haven't traveled much in my life. A tour in Afghanistan while in the Marines, not really my ideal vacation getaway. But I can't imagine anywhere prettier than this. "By plane is the best way to see this area," I tell her through the headset as I pilot the Cessna turbo amphibian float plane. The plane seats 4, but it's just Valentine and me today.
"You didn't tell me you were a pilot," she says.
We haven't had a chance to talk, and we've kept it light and impersonal, since I practically dragged her grumbling body out of Sarah's house this morning.
She'd at least ceased complaining when I ran into the wounded caribou and came out with sausage biscuits and coffee. She went totally silent for a moment when she saw the plane as we walked down the docks to it, except for that tiny gasp of surprised delight I know she didn't want me to hear. But I did. "Never came up," I tell her, as I head toward Beam Canal, which is the major waterway that goes straight through the heart of Misty Fjords. "I actually own this plane with four other guys. We're all recreational pilots and just do this because we enjoy it. We'll take it out to go camping in some remote areas or fishing and hiking, that sort of stuff. But none of us alone can afford one of these, so we all went in on it together."
"How often do you fly?"
she asks as she turns in the passenger seat to look at me.
"Once every few years," I say with a shrug. "I'm a little rusty right now, but it's coming back to me."
Valentine's hands fly up and seize her shoulder harness, but realizing there's nothing she can do that will help things, she squeaks,
"You're joking, right?"
"Totally joking," I tell her with a chuckle, and I figure maybe laughter, or extreme fear, will get her to loosen up more with me. I then point to the east and tell her, "That's Beam Canal below us. I'm going to set her down."
"Why?"
she asks, sounding slightly panicked.
"There's a shore we can ground on, and I brought a picnic," I tell her. "We might be able to see some orcas if we're lucky. Definitely some sea lions."
"What about bears?"
she asks, a little panicked still, but also highly curious now.
"Not where I'm putting down, but we'll fly back over an area where we'll see some," I promise her. The abundance of wildlife is extreme, and she won't be disappointed. I land the plane on the water with no issues, as it's fairly calm out today, and maneuver it over to a shore that's only accessible if you have a float plane or boat without a motor to ground it. The Cessna has floats with polycarbonate protection that enables beaching, so I pull it right up onto the rocky shore. Normally, I'd go on a long hike from here, but not today. I'm sure the last thing Valentine wants is to head into the woods again. But at least we can have a nice lunch on the shore and maybe spot some whales while we're at it. Mostly, though, I want to talk. And now that I've got her out here in the wilderness with no way to escape, she's going to have to listen to what I say.
Chapter 15. Valentine. Well, if there is one glaring, fundamental difference I've found between Logan and all the other men I've dated, is that he's very clear in what his intentions are. There are no vague promises that can be reneged on or overinflated proclamations that make you doubt his goals. Logan tells it like it is, looking you directly in the eye, or perhaps while tweaking your nipple to make a point, but when he pulled me out of Sarah's house, I was not left with one single question about his intentions. Now, there's nothing wrong with a little mystery, but I have to say, this take-control attitude he has appeals to me. And being honest, just with myself for now, I was ready to walk out of Sarah's door with him to watch him follow through on everything he told me would happen today. I'll admit, the plane was a surprise, and I liked that as well. Logan still has some mystery about him. When he brings the plane to a stop, the bottoms of the floats scraping loudly along the rocks that line the shore, he cuts the engine and removes his headset. I do the same. With efficiency, and even grace, for someone so large, Logan disembarks and helps me out onto the shore, and then proceeds to set up a homie camp for our lunch. He pulls two folding canvas chairs out of the back of the plane, a decent-sized cooler that holds our food and then doubles as a table, and another bag with plates and utensils.
"Sit,"
Logan says as he sets up our picnic lunch. It's totally high-handed, but it's also done in a gentlemanly tone to denote that he'll get everything ready. So, I watch him as he pulls out a green salad with grilled chicken, fruit salad, and cookies. Then he pours Diet Cola into red plastic cups, makes me a plate and hands it to me, and I settle back while he dishes up his own food. We're quiet as we eat,
and I take my time to study the surroundings. I've never seen such raw, natural beauty in my life. I'm wealthy and have the means to travel, and I do quite a bit, but never to a place like this. Never even thought to travel somewhere as wild and remote as this until Jeremy suggested it. I've been to Paris, Vienna, Rome, and Zurich, basking in European culture and history. I've taken charming trips to Vermont to ski in the winter, and I've been snorkeling in Jamaica. On a whim, I've flown to Chicago because there's a store that had a coat I really wanted, and I've been to LA to see movie premieres due to my family's connections. But not one single thing about all of the amazing places I've been could ever compare to what is laid out all around me right now. Just miles and miles of rich green forest and mountains tipped in glistening snow that sparkles like diamonds. The water is a blue unlike anything I've seen before. It's not that greenish blue of the tropics, but almost a sapphire blue that actually doesn't look real. It's so beautiful. And as I'm chewing on a piece of chicken, I almost choke as I watch a large bird swoop down from above, its claws hitting the water hard and fast before its massive wings are stroking against the air violently to lift back up again. In its talons is a massive thrashing fish. A salmon, I assume, since that's what most people come here to fish for. "Whoa," I say softly as I watch it fly away. When my face lowers, I find Logan watching me with a satisfied smile on his face. This should irritate me, but it doesn't. "What?"
"I'm just glad you're getting to see things that you wouldn't ordinarily get to see where you're from."
"I once saw a mugger swoop down on an older lady and grab her purse," I offer, to show that I'm not without experience. Logan chuckles.
"You got me there. That's not something I've seen, even working the Seattle streets."
"It is so beautiful here," I say on a contented sigh as I continue to look around while we finish our lunches. "Thank you for bringing me here." Logan nods, eats more of his salad, although I notice he tends to eat more chicken than lettuce. When he puts his plate down on the cooler that serves as our table, he settles back into his canvas chair and stretches his long legs out in front of him. Lacing his fingers together and setting his hands on his flat belly, he asks,
"So what's your story, Valentine? I know you're from New York, and you came here not to appreciate the Alaskan wilderness, but to appreciate the abundance of men."
"That's true," I tell him, not sugarcoating my original intentions at all. I've told him that from the start it was my intention to date. Granted, I'd changed that intention after I was intimate with Logan, but then he went and ruined that, so now I'm not sure what in the hell my goals are during my remaining time here.
"What is your life like back in New York?"
he asks. And I'm extremely confused because I thought this would be about the time he started to grovel as he'd promised to do this morning. "Logan, does it really matter what my life is like back there?" I ask him softly. "I mean, I appreciate you bringing me out here and stuff, but is there really any reason for us to try to get to know each other better?" Pushing up from his relaxed pose in his seat, he leans forward and rests his elbows on his knees.
"Yeah, I want to know more about you. I think you're beyond intriguing. You say you came here to sample all the men, but I don't think that's really you."
"You know nothing about me," I say with irritation.
"Which is why I just asked you about your life back in New York,"
he points out calmly. I just blink at him for the circular way he just brought me around, and it pisses me off that he led me there without any real effort. It's almost as if I wanted to be led around by him. Shaking my head, I say, "Listen, you're a nice guy."
"Whoa, whoa, whoa,"
he says as he holds his hands up, palms out to stop me.
"Don't even fucking go with the nice guy brush off. Clearly, I'm not a nice guy, as I hurt your feelings to the point I can't seem to make it up to you."
You don't have to make up anything.
You see, I don't think I'm really all that great with women.
Logan interrupts. And that statement is so surprising, I snap my mouth shut. Despite him standing me up, it's been my impression he's pretty damn awesome with women.
I told you that I only had one really serious relationship, and it wasn't all that serious because we didn't have any qualms about parting ways. And since then, well, I just don't have a lot of experience.
I cock my eyebrow at him in pure disbelief. What we did in his bed indicates he has a lot of experience. Logan chuckles and clarifies,
I'm talking about the dating part, the getting to know someone part, the caring for someone part.
Because you are really damn good in bed, I mutter, so at least I'm being truthful about his good qualities.
I've been told that a time or two, he says.
I do not like the way a surge of jealousy flows through me over that, which is utterly ridiculous. Who Logan fucks, or when he fucks them, or how often, or how many orgasms, or...
Valentine,
Logan says softly, cutting into my thoughts, still leaning forward in his chair and looking at me intently with those blue eyes.
I fucked up the other day. You told me you were here to date the locals. You and I were intimate, and it was beyond amazing. You had not been intimate with the others. I therefore assumed that when you agreed to go out with me again, that there would be no other dates. It was a clear lack of communication on my part, particularly when I started listening to the gossip. I should have asked you straight up, should have asked you what your intentions were with me and the others around here. I didn't. And I acted like an asshole by blowing you off, and for that, I am really, really sorry. It was a stupid mistake I will not make again. It's my hope you'll forgive me, and at the least we can be friends again.
He stops and looks at me expectantly, clearly wanting to know if his words made an impact. And they most certainly have. As sad as it is to admit it, in my entire dating life, I've never had a man apologize to me with such genuine sincerity. I've never had a man shoulder 100% of the burden of fault. Usually, the men I've been with want to pass off at least some culture.